We've said rates should be raised patiently and gradually. Part of what I'm thinking is the impact on the dollar, potentially destabilizing effects on the rest of the world.
Uber has lost so much money. Does this at all affect the company's plans to go public, or if it would to go public?
I think they have plenty of cash. I think we're reporting that there's something like $8 billion in cash that they're sitting on. So I don't think there's any hurry. And so I wouldn't expect it in the next couple of quarters. But obviously, that's the direction they're moving.
I understand better than anyone that facts are inconvenient to headlines. We have given out 700,000 free EpiPens. We stock 65,000 public schools in this country with free EpiPens to ensure that they're there when needed.
But the cynics would say to that, you're just legislating in a new market.
I'm legislating in the access to EpiPens.
WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:10 and it is Friday. It's August 26, 2016. Good morning. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Welcome to another business day, the last business day of the week. We've got lots to talk about today. You know how you're always delayed at the airport? Guess who was causing those delays? The new report out shows it's the airlines themselves that are causing those delays. We're going to talk with Rick Sini a little bit later in the program. And Paul Nolte is here for our regular Friday chat. Interest rates going to be the big topic today about our portfolios and finances and the economy. He's had coffee. I have not. So that should set the tone for what is coming up in just a few moments. But first, to the WGN Market Desk, here's what's going on around the world. First, overseas in Europe this morning, we're seeing markets generally, let me refresh my screen here, generally are 1, 2, 3 lower. The DAX, the CAC, the FTSE is up just a little bit, but everything else is lower. In Asia, markets are mixed. The Nikkei off almost 1%, 195 overnight. Futures in this country pointing up just a little bit. The Dow futures up about 5. The S&P futures up 1. NASDAQ flat this morning. Here's what's going on. We're waiting for this speech later this morning, later today, by the Fed chairman, Janet Yellen. She'll be speaking in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and everybody wants to know, are we going to see interest rates go up this year? One of the Fed officials, several of the Fed officials have been out this week talking, floating balloons, and talking about whether or not this might happen, including the Federal Reserve president of Chicago, who has generally been against any rate increases. Chicago Fed President Charles Evans has long called for patience in raising rates. He's not really showing his hand on this, but he says he wants to give inflation a better chance of reaching the Fed's 2% target sooner. We have not, I don't think, reached that point yet. Also yesterday, we heard from the Dallas Fed president, Robert Kaplan. Maybe it was Thursday or Wednesday we heard from him. He said that maybe in the not-too-distant future, we could be talking about taking this other step. And then Kansas City Fed president Esther George, whose bank has hosted this conference, where the Federal Reserve chair will speak. It's actually going to be in Wyoming, but they're sponsoring it by Kansas City. She said, I think it's time to move, her words exactly, on interest rates. So will they or won't they? By Robert Lutz, chief investment officer at Cabot Wealth Management, is that we might actually see a decision on these interest rates by the end of the year.
My guess would be she's going to continue to walk that narrow line between being data dependent and recognizing that the economy is a little stronger. Today we had some very good durable goods numbers that were pretty constructive. And the data all along has been fairly constructive, not barn burner, but fairly good. And this is why I've said that I think quantitative easing is accomplishing what they want.
The reports they're talking about employment seems to be kicking along nicely. Durable goods orders were up. Paul Nolte in the conversation now, as he is every Friday morning with us in studio this morning. Good morning, Paul, from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago.
Good morning, Steve.
Well, the tea leaves, there are a lot of tea leaves floating in your coffee that I haven't had this morning. What did they say?
Well, actually, it's more the coffee beans that are floating in mine. We now have a new dual mandate for the Fed. It's to raise rates prior to a recession. And then the second one is don't cause a recession. So we're having problems with communication. The Fed meeting that we had a couple months ago, we got the minutes on. There were a couple Fed officials that said, you know, we should be raising rates. And then as soon as they're able to get out on the rubber chicken circuit and talk about what their thoughts are, there seems to be a lot more people that are thinking we should be raising rates. So the markets, as a result, are been doing nothing really for the last 6 to 8 weeks, waiting to see, are we really going to raise rates or not? And so I think the Fed is still market dependent, not so much data dependent. I think they're really focused on the markets, and that's why they keep floating these trial balloons.
And the markets this week have, you know, for lack of a better description, have sort of been flatlined. They've not gone one way or the other this week.
No, as we say in the business, they've been violently unchanged. We've been waiting around for them to do something, and so at 9:10, whenever the she starts talking, they'll release the information just ahead of that. Everybody will parse through it, and then once that gets the decision gets made as to which way she is leaning, then we start wringing our hands about the next item on the agenda.
We're going to get into more of this as our conversation continues this morning. Some other issues as well in the economy that we'll talk to Paul Nolte about from Kingsview Asset Management.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 519. Welcome back to the program. Paul Nolte's in the studio this morning with us here on The Opening Bell from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, we put so much emphasis on this story about interest rates. Remind our listeners again why we do that and why it's important that we see something one way or the other.
You know, to be honest with you, I'm not so sure it's all that important.
Okay.
Because when we took a look at what happened after the December rate increase, the markets were pretty quiet going into that meeting. The Fed waived in September, October a year ago. It raised rates in December. The market sold off in January, February, and everybody pointed to the rate increase as the reason why, forgetting that oil prices had been falling for the prior 6 months and really fell out of bed in January and February. But here we are at near all-time highs again and have forgotten the fact that the Fed raised rates. So I think the economy and people can handle a rate increase. We're not talking about 12% interest rates. We're talking about very minimal rate increases. The problem is that we're in a very interconnected global economy, and other central banks are doing their best to push a lot of money into their financial system, which ultimately will wind up in ours as well.
And an economy note or two here, preferably not the one that I got when I was in college that I fell asleep on, but explain why interest rates should be going up on a regular basis, at least right now, because of what we're seeing in the economy.
The economy is doing okay. It's not fabulous. The dual mandate that I kind of referenced earlier is inflation and full employment. And we have full employment. Inflation is we're struggling with. We are struggling, I think, more with an overall deflationary environment around the world. And that's why we're going through all these extraordinary measures. Because central banks have nothing in their arsenal for a deflationary environment. They don't know what to do. They can't get you to spend money. So that's why we're seeing negative interest rates. The problem is that backfires. There's a lot of information in negative interest rates, and that information generally is bad. As you and I would read that and say, well, gosh, things can't be doing all that well because we have negative rates, so I'm going to save more money. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to spend. I'm going to hang on to the money that I have. So it's a self-perpetuating cycle that is negative.
And also bad for the economy. We saw this week more people are saving money. They're putting more money aside. They're not spending it out in the economy. So the economy, the retail sector is doing poorly. Other places are doing poorly. People don't spend money. That hurts the economy. Over the past in the history, when we've recovered from bad times, recessions, we've seen more interest rates over a shorter period of time.
We've seen rate increases. This is one of the longest time frames between interest rate hikes in history. And you would argue that we're in a different environment today than we've ever been in. So, again, what we're seeing is a Fed that is trying very hard to do monetary and fiscal policy together, and they really only have one tool, and that's fiscal policy. I'm sorry, monetary policy, and they're missing out on the fiscal policy.
And the negative interest rates issue and the stability of the markets, we've seen not only the markets recover and do well after that interest rate hike, but they survived the Brexit vote, and we're now seeing, you know, there may actually be people talking about redoing the Brexit thing again. I saw that in the headlines this past week, although I don't know how that's going to work. But in other countries, the people who are in these negative rate situations are saying this is horrible. And one leader actually said it was going to be fatal to his economy.
And that's, again, because there's a lot of information that's informed in there is that things are bad. That's why we have negative interest rates. Well, as a consumer, if that's what I'm thinking, then I'm going to be sitting on my pile of cash. I'm not spending it. And in order to get people to spend, they're trying to create the inflation, because if prices go up and or they're expected to go up tomorrow, I'm going to spend money today to get in front of that. The thought is today rates are a good prices of goods are not going up. They're going down a little bit. So if I don't have to spend today because things will be a little bit cheaper tomorrow, and they can't do anything about changing that mentality. But I think they still need to go ahead and raise interest rates because our economy is doing fine. The Fed has kind of expanded their mandate a little bit to look at the global economy as opposed to look at our own. And I think our own is very able to withstand a 25 basis point increase.
I had an interesting thought about you this week when we did the story about more people saving money. At the same time, we're seeing them not spend money and this interest rate issue in the news. How do you feel when you see people saving money, first of all, but then not the economy not doing so well and interest rates not where they should be? I mean, because your goal is to make people money for their portfolios or find how to make. How does that happen when we're in a situation like this?
Well, as an economist will tell you, you know, saving money is a good thing for you and I, but it's a bad thing if everybody does it at the same time because you lose that spending power in the economy. Ultimately, everybody's a little bit different. Ultimately, they want to have a safe and secure retirement, enough money to do with what they want to do. And a very low interest rate environment forces people to have a lot more money set aside so that they can get the income that they're looking for off of those assets. So, you know, think about it very simply. If I have $1 million put away and I'm getting 10% on it, I have $100,000 I can spend. If I'm only getting 1% on it, now I only have $10,000 a year to spend. So I need to save that much more, and that's, I think, some of the mentality that's going on in the economy right now and among consumers.
So as you counsel your clients in the middle of all of this, and I don't want to even call it turmoil because I think it's we're creating this, not you and I, but you know the people on CNBC and all these other channels that are just screaming at each other about this, well, how do you counsel your clients about what to do?
And, you know, it's... It is to turn off the TV and don't worry so much about, you know, what is being hollered at the TV. Slow and steady. Continue to have a regular savings program. Be careful on, as a retiree, be careful on what you're spending. Have some spending limits. Have a budget. Do all those types of things that everybody's been taught for years. That has not changed. What has changed is the fact that we're in a lower return environment, and because of that, you do need more money to have those assets available to you, probably for a much longer time frame than we think at this point.
And so what has to happen for me to press this red button here that sends out the alerts to everybody that danger, danger in the in the economy? What would be a red alert situation that could happen? Or are we in better condition, better shape than that probably won't happen?
Well, I think a couple things to take a look at is employment. And that tends to be a decent indicator for how the economy is doing. And the weekly jobless claims that we see every week are generally very good. So the economy is bumping along. We are creating jobs. And so you know, there is a lot of information contained in that. A lot of the other data, again, is okay. So we're not, I don't think, in jeopardy of a recession. It's really that recession that I'm most concerned about, because it's in that recession that you're going to see the equity markets go down 15, 20, 30%, as we've seen in past recessions. Then at that point, it becomes a very good point to be buying stocks.
Paul Nolte, Kingsview Asset Management, our portfolio manager here on the Opening Bell, and economic expert every Friday. You can find him at kingsview.com. And Paul, are you making the popcorn for Janet Yellen later this morning, or am I bringing it?
We're bringing coffee and donuts, yes.
Very nice. I think it's 9 o'clock Chicago time. We'll be watching that, thinking of you, and we'll look forward to seeing and talking to you next Friday.
Absolutely. Thank you.
From ABC News Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone, supplementing what your child learns in the classroom through an online science game. After this. Alien planets and flying squirrels are now helping children learn science. Blue Apprentice by a California company called Galaxies is a science adventure game and app meant to help supplement what kids learn in the classroom.
I have never left the planet.
The game was developed by Osman Rashid, the founder of Galaxies.
Blue Apprentice is an intergalactic science adventure. The goal of the game is to help kids master their elementary science concepts.
Like the elements in the periodic table, it's a story happening in space, the characters lead players who Osman says can be as young as 6.
A motivated kid learns a lot more than someone who's struggling with it, and that's the whole concept behind the game.
Galaxy's Blue Apprentice is available in the iOS App Store and on the web, soon for Android devices. With Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. You may have seen this report earlier this week about airlines actually being the cause of all of the delays that you are running into at the airports. Surprising? Well, maybe. But it's also indicative of what's happening in the airline industry. They're making a lot of money on bag fees. We've seen the TSA have problems over the summer. And guess what? We're getting ready to head into another holiday. Are the airlines, the airports, the TSA, everybody ready for this? So let's bring in from Dallas this morning, Fair Compare CEO and founder, Rick Assini, who's with us. Rick, first, let's talk about Labor Day. Is this going to be a big Labor Day weekend for travel?
Yeah, there's been a couple different forecasts. We've seen the one that is the usual forecast we see from Airlines for America, which is a group that is related to all the airlines except for Delta, says that they're expecting a little over 15 million passengers. That's up 4% year over year. I was a little surprised when I saw the numbers, because we've seen some cheaper prices. We've seen the economy not be quite as good. So I was expecting actually to have it to be a little bit slower, but it looks like it's going to grow, and that's typically means higher prices, at least for Labor Day. Now, I did take a look around for some last-minute deals. You can get out to the West Coast pretty cheap last minute, but you have to buy your ticket for Labor Day weekend today or tomorrow.
So the question is this, how does this compare to the other summer holidays like Memorial Day and 4th of July?
Yeah, Labor Day weekend tends to be a little bit slower than those, because those are closer to the tail end of school season. Kids are typically back in school on Labor Day weekend, so they're not traveling. They've already taken their summer trips in August and July. So this is usually people that are traveling to meet family, for example, going off to a resort or something, that do not have kids. Because if you have kids, everybody's scurrying to make sure they're ready for school season.
Now that it's the end of the summer travel season, the end of the summer season, Chicago's mayor's out at O'Hare Airport applauding TSA. Apparently, they've gotten their wait times down to zero, pretty much. Have they gotten their act together, or is this just a dog and pony show?
Well, they certainly have gotten off the national news media, and so it shows what they can do when they get rid of people that aren't helping the situation by chopping a few people off and then adding the people they need to do their jobs and making sure they're trained. They just do not want to be on the national news shows at night, and I think they've done a pretty good job. I was extremely worried, because when they had these issues, especially out at O'Hare, this was before the busy summer season. This was sort of a precursor, and I think they did. I was giving them an F then, it's probably more like a B plus or A right now.
That's not bad going into the fall season. So I know you saw this video out of, I believe it was Columbus, Ohio, where the man goes through TSA and he has a monkey with him and claims it's a therapy monkey. And the TSA hardly reacts at all to this. They let him on the plane. What?
Yeah, I've seen the most crazy things carried through actual security, and in that particular video is pretty funny. And to be honest, I don't even know what the policies are for those. I'd have to personally stop that person if I was in TSA and ask a supervisor, because I'm not sure if I understand if there's that kind of policy. But as far as TSA is concerned, I think this is a big problem, right? You have a couple million passengers that fly each day. It's a mind-numbing job. You're doing the same thing over and over, day in, day out. People are cranky because they have to take off their shoes. Once they sort out some of the technologies, they get it back to sort of pre-9/11 screening, or they get enough people signing up for TSA PreCheck, these sort of TSA issues will all go away.
I think the Americans with Disability Act prevents anybody from questioning you if you have a so-called therapy animal. But it does raise the question about, you know, where do you cut it off? Because there are therapy horses, there are therapy pigs. At what point does do the airlines, because isn't a monkey a potential problem, bigger problem than me carrying on a bottle of hair gel?
Yeah, not only that, it's an agricultural problem and a variety of other things if it's not really a therapy monkey. So in these particular cases, they have to have a set of policies. I'm not a policymaker for TSA, but in this particular instance, I think common sense probably needs to reign at some point.
Speaking of common sense, we've all seen these videos of the recent plane crashes where people are getting their carry-on luggage off of the plane before jumping down the chute to save their lives. What is the procedure for that? I mean, and just as a passenger, what do you do if somebody's doing that?
Yeah, well, there are a couple things. First of all, you always want to try to defer as a passenger to flight attendants. They're very well trained in these particular situations. They've been trained on how to handle people that are doing what I would consider to be absolutely crazy things, like worrying about their carry-on luggage during an event like that. So your first thing is to defer to the flight attendants. If the flight attendants aren't around, I think, again, it's part of that common sense. You want to help people get off. That's the most important thing in those particular situations, and do it as quickly as possible. For those folks that are bucking the system in that pretty case, I think you can be firm but handy with them in those particular cases.
So I if it were me and I barrel rolled, if I just blocked you, would that be fair?
You know, I don't recommend that. I don't think that's part of the procedures that the flight attendants would like you to do. But in general, it happens from time to time. Luckily, it's the safest form of travel that there is, so we don't see this very often. And I can understand. We've seen, you know, sort of the assume the crash position on the airplane, the movie, and that's what happens sometimes.
Talk to us a little bit. I don't know if you've ever had to go down one of those chutes. I did it once during a media event. And going down, I think it was off of a 737. It's not a very safe thing to do in itself. It's a pretty steep fall. I mean, what do people need to know about that?
I've never had to actually do it. I actually haven't tested it. But in general, absolutely, it can be dangerous. That's why there's a certain procedure. There's a certain way you hold your body. You're jumping feet first. You're tucking your arms in because you don't want things flailing around in those particular cases. I will have to tell you that I've seen some of the training that flight attendants go through. I've been to a couple of their schools. They are absolutely excellent in these particular situations. Not only have I seen flight attendants save people on aircraft, at least twice now I've seen them defibrillate a couple people that were having heart attacks. They're very well trained. It may not seem that way, and they don't kick in, and that training doesn't kick in because it doesn't have to very often, but when it does, those are the people that save lives.
And another common sense note, we heard on this one flight with the turbulence, people falling all over the place, even after they were warned to sit down and put their seatbelts on. That's another one that people seem to ignore.
It's so simple just to keep your seatbelt on. I've been in some of the worst flights that have dropped, literally where people have hit their heads on the ceiling. It can be very dangerous. It's even though they turn off the seatbelt sign, it's always a good idea. They always mention it's a good idea. It's not required, but to leave that seatbelt on. And if you're on an overnight flight, for example, you have to leave that seatbelt on, or flight attendants will rouse you up out of that sleep, which is very hard to do on a 9-hour flight to Europe, for example.
So get us out of town for someplace fun.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, if you're heading out, I was just looking across the country at them doing multiple cities. If you're paying over $200 for any ticket outside of Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Labor Day weekend, you're actually paying too much. West Coast tickets under $200, East Coast tickets under $190. I've even seen some on American and United at $150 to the East Coast, places like New York, Washington, D.C., Boston. You have Orlando at $200 round trip. By far, right now, Chicago has to be the cheapest city to fly out of, especially during this fall deal zone.
And watch for flash sales and follow Fair Compare.
Yeah, if you follow Fair Compare, we're going to send you deal alerts. We'll also send you notes on your airlines when the prices jump or and sign up for the airlines' social media sites, Facebook, Twitter, for example, Instagram. They are all having 1 and 2 hour sales that you can get only on those social media platforms.
Happy travels.
Hey, thanks, Steve.
Bye. And that's Fair Compare's CEO and founder from Dallas this morning, Rick Cini. You can follow him on Twitter at Rick Cini at faircompare.com, at faircompare on Twitter.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 549 on the WGN market desk this morning. Dow futures lower off about a point. The S&P, NASDAQ futures are mixed to flat this morning around the globe. This morning in Europe, markets generally higher, mixed though in Europe, higher in Asia, in Hong Kong and the Shanghai Index also a little higher, but the Nikkei fell almost 1% overnight. Let's find out what's happening on the commodities markets. Some good news from the world of agriculture, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And good news for some people. Well, people with crops are looking at a continuation. I have never seen this late in the crop year the good to excellent category for the corn crop actually goes up. It generally starts going down about the middle of July. And this week on Monday, the good to excellent category went up 1%. That's the kind of a crop we're having. Talking to our farm broadcaster friend Don Molino down in Louisiana, they are not having a good time. Soybeans particularly hit with the flooding down there. And rice. They grow a lot of rice in Louisiana, and they're, of course, under floodwaters down there. Cattle futures yesterday down for a ninth day in a row. Bearish market fundamentals, and August cattle ended the day down 25 cents a hundredweight. October down 37 cents a hundredweight. Because by now, most of the retailers have purchased the meat they were going to have for Labor Day weekend grilling, and also some government purchases for school lunch programs. And as a result, we're looking, you were talking about airfares going down. Well, if you're grilling over the Labor Day weekend, you should be paying less for beef and pork, because hog futures also going down yesterday. The October contract ended down $1.62 a hundredweight. So the livestock folks, particularly cattle folks, are having a tough time. We're in the season of crop tours, and the one that's happened every year now for a decade or two finished up yesterday. That's the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. A mixed report, but generally speaking, they found the crops to be pretty good. I didn't find anybody that said the Illinois corn crop would come in at 200 bushels to acre, which USDA said in its August crop report earlier this month. But generally speaking, they said the Illinois average per acre yield should come in at a little over 193 bushels to the acre. Next week, Farm Progress Show, Boone, Iowa. I'll be checking in every day from there, Steve, and because we have a lot of people driving to that show early in the morning, and they'll be listening to WGN to find out what the weather is like in Boone, Iowa. Greg Soldier, our TV meteorologist, said yesterday that it could be a little showery out there for the big three-day event. So we'll be out in Boone, and we'll be covering that from there. And, yeah, we'll be flying Air Orient out there, weather allowing, yes.
I'm interested in your reaction yesterday. I know the Ag Secretary was very excited about this revised forecast for farm exports in 2017, $6 billion jump.
Yes, and that is good news, but I think part of it is because our prices are lower, and so those countries that buy from us take advantage of that lower price. And, you know, we've always said the cure for low prices is lower prices, and the cure for high prices is higher prices. And so that is good news, because that's what bothers me so much about the two presidential candidates. They have no knowledge of how important the agricultural trade is to the United States. And as I've often said, if we shut down our trade in agriculture, we'd have to shut down maybe 45% of the farms and ranches in this country, because we can produce so much that we can't consume. We have to share it with the world. And so that was good news from the department yesterday.
All right, Orion Samuelson, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week from Boone.
Okay.
All right. It's 5:54, and finally, on the opening bell this morning, a couple of notes we want to share with you. First of all, it's not very often we hear from Apple's co-founder Steve Wozniak, but yesterday we did, and he is making it known that he's not very happy with the new iPhone coming out. There are reports the new iPhone will not have an earphone jack. It will not have that 3.5-millimeter earphone jack we're all used to. Wozniak says that is awful. He says this is going to turn, in his words, it will tick off a lot of people. He may be right on this. He doesn't use Bluetooth, doesn't like it. It's not very reliable, he says, and Wozniak should know. He says that they should be rethinking that and maybe can reconsider not having removing that iPhone jack, the headphone jack, but all indications are is that the new iPhone will not have that. Speaking of iPhones, it's very rare, too, that we see an emergency security fix come out for the iPhone. But if you haven't updated your iPhone or your iPad this morning, there's probably an update there waiting. You need to do it immediately. Apple has issued an emergency patch following a dangerous security flaw. This is what they call a zero-day flaw that was found to be a hacking method. This apparently involved a human rights activist in another country who was spied on. And somehow, we won't tell you how because it's really complicated, but they were able to get into the iPhone. They were able to backdoor this somehow, something that the FBI couldn't do, by the way. But this is something you need to update your iPhone now that it's out there. People know about it. The hackers have all the information. It is a zero-day update for iPhone, so do that right away.